This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here at IBM with Felicity March.
Hello, Ian, and thank you. I've worked in technology all my life and been very passionate about it. I am the Cyber Resiliency Specialist for IBM for Europe, and I'm responsible for making sure we keep our clients always on.
We hear a lot about cybersecurity, but what is cyber resiliency?
Yes, we hear an awful lot about cybersecurity, but cyber resiliency fundamentally is the company's capability to maintain its core purpose and integrity in light or after a cyber attack. What that means is we have a lot of companies that believe that if they pay a lot for cybersecurity, that none of the viruses will get through the front door. Unfortunately, we know very well that a lot of the viruses do penetrate, as there has been a lot of public news about certain attacks. We find that companies are incapable of recovering their IT and could be potentially incapable of recovering their IT for a number of weeks. So cyber resiliency is enabling a company to be able to switch over or fail over to a different environment and continue to keep their core purpose and integrity and continue to be able to function in a cyber attack.
So how does that differentiate itself from business continuity or disaster recovery?
Very interesting question. You're absolutely right. Business continuity, disaster recovery, cyber resiliency, there's so many things out there. But fundamentally, we find that clients have disaster recovery. The phrase that I hear most of all is, we only do traditional DR. And traditional DR is basically allowing them to fail over from a failed data center, a flooded data center, or a logical fail. What we're finding with cyber resiliency, when there's a total outage of their IT environment, that they haven't actually tested their DR plans or their business continuity plans to see how it would withstand from a cyber attack. The focus in IT departments, we hear we've spent millions on security, we have a security contract, we're okay, we're covered. I was at a function a few weeks ago in the Netherlands where I had a number of CISOs come up to me after my pitch who said, we don't even know the name of our DR manager, let alone the fact that we should be relying on them to think about how we actually recover. Cyber or security looks at being able to protect an environment or an enterprise from being attacked and be able to respond should they actually get breached, identify the virus and respond to it. But if you think about it in terms of an attack, they are not responsible for rebuilding the environment after it has happened. They will find the virus, they will do hardening of the environment and make sure that they will not be breached again. But of course, we find lots of other companies that then sit there and say, well, okay, the virus is gone, but all my data centers are empty. We find that people do not understand who is responsible for that recovery or actually how they would then go ahead and recover their environment.
If I think about a cyber attack, as most companies would think about it, it happens, it's over, we rebuild. But in fact, what you're talking about is that it's not just over, it goes on. And therefore, as part of that rebuilding, they're struggling to understand what is where, what is safe, what can be trusted. How do companies begin to plan for that? Because I can plan for the flooding of a data center. I can plan for a major power outage. But how do I plan for a continual ongoing attack scenario?
There's many different ways you have to do it. And what we actually find, if I can reverse slightly, we find that people have not got DR plans for their whole enterprise. We find that people don't want to do DR tests either because it's too invasive on their production environment. They will only do a DR test when needed by regulation, or they do it once a year, which takes a lot of manual preparation. Where the problems I'm finding and I'm working with clients are now is not the fact that it's an ongoing attack. It's actually the fact that their DR plans are insufficient for that one cyber attack anyway. If it is an ongoing attack, the way we approach it is looking at a switchover mentality where they can switch over to another environment as soon as they see that they're breached to continue functioning. Now that raises a very interesting question because in the Poneman study this year that's come out and the time to actually find that they have been breached is quite a significant number of days. How do you actually make sure you can fail your environment over to a clean environment that has not been attacked by a virus? We're working at the moment with some tooling and software that will actually allow you to revert back to the sleeping giant in your environment rather than the explosion of the virus. So if you imagine a virus has gone in and it's sleeping, it hasn't changed any of the config files, it hasn't actually done any damage, but then weeks later after you've done multiple backups you find that that giant has awoken. In that case, what you can do is then revert back to the sleeping giant and then extract it from there, but at least keep the customers up and running and functioning in their IT environment.
How does that affect data? Let's think about databases. We have multi-phase commits with databases to make sure the records are written away and are validated. If we start rolling back, In a banking scenario, for example, we suddenly have a whole bunch of customer transactions that we're not sure of. We have money that has moved around. It might be a shipping company. We have goods that have gone around, goods that transit somewhere. If I can't trust my data today, and I have to start going back through my data to find a clean state, what does that do to my business?
Well, that's an interesting one, because you look at the NotPetya attack that happened. We were finding companies that had to spend 7 weeks rebuilding their IT environment and lost a huge amount of data. We're now working with looking at clients that could potentially roll back to 2 hours to get to a clean environment again. Yes, you have to look at your policies. You have to look at your processes. We used to, Ian, as you know, be very proud that we could recover a company within 24 hours. Do you remember those days? Mm-hmm. And then it went sub 4 hours and we all got very excited. And then sub 1 hour, and now it's sub 1 minute, and it's all about active and tertiary. Yes, it's all about policies and processes. We've just recently become very reliant on the fact that all that data is going to be there, but we didn't used to be. So actually it's a correlation of organization, governance, processes and tooling to be able to then revert back to a clean environment should the worst possible happen, and actually then look at change management systems as well and look at how that would then react. But at the moment, the option we've got is NotPetya took some companies out for 2 weeks. I know one company that was out for 7 weeks, or revert back in 2 hours and then have processes and policies around that to be able to then do the data collect.
How much does the way we've built our DR and our business continuity plans over the year assist an attacker? If we think about this, we now have active-active. As you said, sleeping giants. I install the malware. I let you replicate it everywhere you've got a system. And then I activate it when I want. You roll back. I just activate it again and again and again. What do we have to do? How do we make sure that what we're rolling back to actually is a clean, steady state and not in an hour, 5 hours, 2 days' time, going to repeat the whole scenario?
There's various different things you can do. This, of course, cyber resiliency is something that's an emerging thought within the IT industry, an emerging trend around business resilience and cyber resilience. When viruses do wake up, the first thing that happens is they change extensions and they change files. If you monitor exactly what's happened in your config files, and you can do this agentless, you take a copy, you then bring it up and actually scan any changes that have happened to all the config files around your environment. And if there has been any changes, then these immediately get flagged or cross-checked with your change control. Control and see what changes have been made. That's one way of actually looking at it. There's other ways of looking at it as well around the overall data and the quality of the golden copy of data. But the whole policy is you've either got agents sitting all over your environment listening, or you take a golden copy and then run forensics on that copy to see actually what's happening. And that then allows you to work out what the changes are. That said, I think over the next 5 years, hackers are going to get an awful lot stronger in understanding the vulnerabilities, because if you take that one step further, you then realize your change management system is a system of record. If they need to go and change the change management system before they then make the changes in your environment, that's exactly where they'll head to. So it is interesting how it's going to actually expand over the next 5 years to see what will happen.
So change management is telling me when the file's been changed. It's not telling me what changed that file. So how do I track back through my change management to find out what initiated it? Because clearly what initiated it is the stuff I need to get rid of.
The approach that we're taking is linking up with that change management system that will actually tell you who invoked that change and exactly what files plan to be changed by that change. Mm-hmm. So that when you look at those config files, when you've mounted a copy of your data and look at what files have been changed, you can actually then proactively cross-reference what your change has done. You're actually immediately proving that your change has been effective and been applied. That's the approach we take, is actually cross-check with every change management and then also identify what changes haven't been approved by change control. And what files have been changed that you don't have a record to cross-reference. Although there may be a change logged in your change management system, if it has also then identified that it's changed files that were not actually determined by that change. But yes, that does mean you have to have a specific record of exactly what files are going to be written by that change, which is a good thing.
It's a great solution if I'm a large enterprise with a large IT department where I have control of everything. But we're moving to a state where everything in my IT is being outsourced to different people. I have one group of people over there who are handling those systems. I have a bunch of cloud vendors over there handling all those different systems. None of these people are using the same change management solution. In fact, I don't even know if they're using change management to begin with. How do we adapt that from nice, steady state, large organization, traditional IT, to a very dissipated change management world today?
Now, you just come on to one of my places of passion, because I started IT with a vengeance before outsourcing came about. I built my career right through learning about outsourcing and then really working with clients on massive, massive outsourcing deals, multi-billion deals. Had the real joy of being the people that negotiate it, shape it, design it, and run these services as well. You're right. One thing I said when we met before was I've watched when deals get negotiated and IT deals get negotiated, and the closer you get to contract signature, the less architects are in the room and the more procurement and lawyers are in the room negotiating points. I don't believe there's any company that gets traditional IT in the way we saw it, where it's all on-prem, it's all being run in-house, and they're not relying on anybody else. I agree with you when, in my experience with the customers that I've dealt with, there is a lack of understanding about DR and backup. I believe backup has been improved since the delight of GDPR has come along and actually asked questions about where is my data and where are we putting it. But the main problem is when we are looking at DR and looking at how a company would be responsible for bringing themselves back up online, we're finding the responsibilities are in different places. We're finding that some people don't have the right change management systems, or certainly don't cross-share. Then if you look at who loses their jobs or who loses revenue or reputation when they do go down, it's the company that's responsible. A lot of companies are on the bleeding edge side, rather than leading edge, but bleeding edge, looking at how they actually do this to change it. There's a lot of companies that need to have a look at that whole thing and question how they bring in suppliers, who is responsible for DR, and every single supplier in the whole chain has to be able or accountable for or show how they would react in an outage.
But many of those cloud suppliers who are brought in are not brought in under IT control. They're brought in by business units today who find a solution out there that can be deployed today. IT's telling them it's still going to be 6 months down the line. So they stop using IT, they ship the data out, they move over to there. IT knows nothing about this system. Who in an organization should have visibility over this?
Forbes have stated in one of their papers that the emergence of the next C-suite executive will be the chief resiliency officer. The reason I brought up the fact that architects are out the room in negotiating contracts is the fact that people looking at risk and the risk that the company holds for providing services should be a group of various different people, but one of them should be the architect as well. We've seen the digital disruption. We've seen what Netflix has done to blockbusters, for example. We've seen what Uber has done to the taxi business, purely because they've got that availability. The disruptors going forward are the people that know how they can keep themselves always on and the reliance of IT for the success of their business. As it becomes more and more important, and the impact on share price of making sure that they are on to provide those overall services, more of the focus will be on resilience, which means the responsibility of making sure what they're building, whether or not they go to the market or whether they use IT, is what is the risk profile that they are holding as a company in all their services that they provide, and then the reliance of IT underneath it, and then of course the mitigating factors that they need to put underneath that in their whole supply chain to make sure that they can do that.
But the challenge in that supply chain is that the supply chain isn't static. A company comes along, somebody buys a service from it, tomorrow morning they're acquired by somebody else. Often the end user knows nothing about that acquisition, they just simply know their service runs, that these people have the data. For whoever's trying to stitch together this cyber resiliency plan, how do they get that visibility into those acquisitions, into those companies that may go bankrupt and somebody else takes over? Because you know, if it goes bankrupt, we don't know till we suddenly don't have our data anymore, or it's locked away somewhere. It seems incredibly complicated, yet we don't have any game plan at the moment. We have no playbook for this.
We're starting to have a playbook. So if I roll you back a few years ago, and do you remember when ITIL came out and SLAs and KPIs, and suddenly someone was telling you it was 99.99999 is exactly what you should be doing to run your overall servers? Looking at the game plan that we've got going forward is what is the standard of the risk profile that we want to manage, or a company wants to manage. So if you imagine looking at the NIST framework, which is the identify, protect, detect, respond, and then recover as an overall circle, we're looking at clients that are starting at looking at how they protect themselves, and then they say, I'm fine, I've got a security contractor with X, Y, and Z. If we actually look through what is the maturity of how they can protect themselves of these viruses walking through the gates, then go all the way around the circle, respond, and then look at the overall recover and identify. We actually do a maturity assessment ourselves. We can show clients where their risks are, where their profile is, and where their profile should be in terms of can they recover and can they identify what their true resiliency is to be able to then go around that circle again. We'll find in industry, as you know, the five nines on whether your server's flashing green lights or not is now purely irrelevant. Mm-hmm. But the standards are now being built by various different people. There's discussion papers being published even by the Bank of England, she says, tapping it in front of her. And also the NCSC is talking about what needs to be done to defend and protect and recover. So it's becoming the buzzword of how can you recover, or how can you not even fail over, we now call it switch over. How can you switch over to a new environment to just keep yourself functioning? So this is an emerging world, without a shadow of a doubt, and there will be standards coming out and there is a game plan. But in IBM, we've got a very clear game plan, which is understand your maturity, understand what your ability is to recover, and then understand and identify how much you embed into a user group, your architects, your supply chain, your resilience, your business continuity and your DR, to make sure that anything you go on, anything you buy, anything you develop and your transformation story actually has resilience baked into the beginning of it.
How do we move from a paper exercise, which is what most business continuity and DR is today, to something that's real? We've always said, if you don't have a restore, you don't have a backup. As you yourself said earlier, people don't want to test their DR plans because it's incredibly disruptive. One of the promises of cloud was we should be able now to just simply restore into the cloud when we have a disaster. But is that going to be enough? Are we actually going to see companies test their cyber resiliency? After all, legally, they're supposed to have a DR plan, but if they don't test it, they don't meet the legal requirements. How do we move that forward to cyber resiliency?
This is where it gets great fun, because these paper exercises, and I don't know how many of your listeners know what it's like to do a DR plan, create a playbook, and have paperwork exercises of folders and folders of exactly what happened and make sure the patching works in your DR environment as much as you've patched into the production environment. But actually what you do is very simple. You orchestrate it. And you orchestrate it. We've got an orchestration tool which, when I first saw it, it blew my mind away. And it was born out of India, where a bank and regulations have a law where they have to actually run from their DR environment multiple times a year. Mm-hmm. We don't have to go from a paper exercise. What we can do is put an orchestration tool in there, and our resiliency orchestration has runbooks that work out all the OS levels, the database levels, the application levels, and the grouping of bringing up parts of the business. Mm-hmm. And then it sits there and it automatically tells you on a dashboard whether you could fail over from 1 second to another, and it'll tell you your recovery point objective and your recovery time objective, RPO and RTO. Then we'll tell you if you want to do a dry run, whether or not you could fail over your DR. The cyber incident recovery that we're doing, and it's being announced August this year, is looking at taking that image, pausing, forensically cleaning it, locking it away in terms of data, or pausing it, looking at the config files, working out what changes were legitimately done and what changes weren't legitimately done, and rolling back any changes that weren't legitimately done, and then locking it away. So same thing, orchestrating it, being able to orchestrate back to clean. What we're finding is a lot of clients are still believing that DR is hard. A lot of clients are running their own DR environments or have segmented DR environments. And I say to anybody who is delivering any IT service, know your role in what your disaster recovery responsibility is. I've seen too many IT companies, not IBM, but IT companies saying, oh, but we don't run their DR, we just do their cloud. Or we don't run their DR, we just do their digital workplace. And I say, well, when it goes down, the NotPetya famously in one company took down 45,000 endpoints within under an hour. So how do you mechanically squirt 45,000 endpoints back out and give them an image again? Every company needs to understand their role within the resilience of the services that they're actually providing. It doesn't happen today, I agree. But the first step is understand your maturity and orchestrate your DR. And it really is so simple once it's orchestrated to just be able to fail over or switch over whenever you want. So the second you see that you're potentially breached, you can fail over.
If we think about backup, disaster recovery, business continuity, IT departments actually think they've got it nailed. The truth is, from cyber attacks, we've seen that they haven't. One of the things in the last 2 years has been the rise of cyber incident response. Companies are practicing this, they're beginning to learn it, because nobody wants to be the next person in front of the TV camera being eviscerated publicly for their company failure. How do we make cyber resilience part of that program?
Very, very good question. And you're right, because I've seen papers about left of boom and right of boom. And a lot of companies are coming up out the floor now, teaching you what you should say when they wake you up on a Saturday morning and tell your IT has gone down. Going back to what I was telling you about the CISO, a lot of CISOs don't know their DR manager. or their business continuity manager. So how do we actually make sure we do this? Well, IBM does a lot of testing and practicing, and we bring clients in and show them what would happen in crisis management. But that does involve your business continuity. It does involve your security team. Two things are interesting. One, I sat in front of a CIO the other day, and the CISO was sitting at one side of the room, and the DR manager, who I dragged and persuaded him to come to the meeting, was sitting on the other side of the room. The CISO stood up in front of the CIO and said, if we got hit by a NotPetya, boss, we're dead in the water. And he went, but that's your job, you recover. He said, no, I can stop it getting in. But if I did have a NotPetya hit my environment, which by rights looking at the virus, I wouldn't have been able to stop with the security stance we've got at the moment. That's it. I've done my job. It's in. I can take it out. But I can't stop your environment from going down. We then turned to the DR manager, who mumbled that he has 19 different DR plans for different systems. And there's all these load balances, so he doesn't know quite where anything is. He doesn't really work with the CISO. So what you do is you make sure that you look at the resiliency role. Hence why Forbes is saying the chief resiliency officer. How do you make sure that all the various different working parts, which you have in a company, they're just not knitted together? It's like Andre Previn said, I'm playing all the right notes, just not necessarily in all the right order. It's important that you sew all these bits together. And again, practice, 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 and train, and look at what happens when you are on an outage. So we've had some wonderful stories where we've turned around to companies and say, right, where's your architecture? Well, it's on the computer. Right, let's have a look where your crisis team is. Well, it's on the computer, which has gone down. Where's your DR? Well, we did have a brilliant DR, but actually it was on the end of the rest of the production, and the road to the DR environment has been blown up. Mm-hmm. We've had people say, oh, well, don't worry, we've outsourced DR. And then they phoned the DR manager in the supplier, who's turned around and said, oh, well, that's civil unrest under force majeure, you're not covered. So yes, you have to take responsibility for your own resilience. You have to take responsibility to be always on, and you have to really practice on what would happen if we had an outage. Can we get hold of our crisis management process? Can we get hold of the right people? And do we know who is responsible for actually bringing the environment back up again?
How do we get the C-suite to actually take the chief resiliency officer seriously? Let's be clear, most of them don't have a CIO sat at the top table. They don't have the CISO sat at the top table. They've had chief marketing officers, chief revenue officers, chief people officers foisted upon them as new titles with the word chief in front, as if it makes any difference if you just put chief in front of a job role. Why are they going to take any more notice of the chief resiliency officer than they have done of technology in the past?
If you look at where they believe cyber attacks or the risk of cyber attacks, and I shared those slides with you, if you look at what the risk is, they realise that the likelihood of a cyber attack is right up there against natural weather disasters, and the impact is right up there with natural weather disasters, and world leaders are not on that sheet, but we'll leave that to one side. What they're realising is there's a 4% to 15% share drop on an impact, and it's not that they've actually been attacked, it's the outage that causes the share drop. So when we've heard some stories about WannaCry, which has been in the paper, and NotPetya and other viruses like that. If you start looking at the revenue that has been lost and the cost of the breach or the cost of actually bringing themselves up, it runs into the hundreds of millions. They might have all these C-suite people being foisted upon them, but at the moment they've got a CIO, and some CIOs are responsible for bringing up their environment again. They've got a CISO, but no one is responsible for making sure that they keep their company running. They're going to take this extremely seriously. Is who is that one point of contact if their environment goes down, and who is responsible for bringing it back up?
We're on stage, we've got a whole bunch of people in front of us. You've got one opportunity to make a pitch to these people as to why they need a chief resiliency officer. What is it?
Each company has to be responsible for making sure they can maintain their core purpose and integrity in light of an outage or in light of a cyber attack. If they do not have all the pieces joined up, or they are not sure who is responsible for recovering from an outage, then they need to start taking this seriously. And we need to look at IT in a different way, looking at your whole supply chain and realizing who's responsible for making sure everybody's responsibility for keeping those systems maintained and up has not probably been a question that's been asked. And without a shadow of a doubt, this is the elephant in the room in IT at the moment.
Felicity, thank you for your time today.
My absolute pleasure.